questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page. We welcome to another episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. I'm Atal, the host of this program. With me in the studio, we have Hujjatul Islam Karimi. Assalamu alaikum, Hujjatul Karimi, and welcome to the show.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, and thank you for having me.
Okay, Shaykh Karimi, for today's discussion, we want to talk about Dua al-Ahd. We can say it is a supplication narrated from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. And the concept of re-allegiance, or it's better to say, playing an oath of allegiance with Imam al-Mahdi and praying for his return is mentioned in that dua. Let's talk a little bit about the significance of this dua. Why is it called Dua al-Ahd? And what kind of ahd or promise, or it's better to say, covenant and treaty does it refer to?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. As you mentioned, this is a famous dua narrated from Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam. We have a couple of famous duas related to Imam Mahdi alayhi salam, and may Allah hasten his reappearance. And Dua al-Ahd is one of them. And one of the significance of this dua is the fact that we are updating our covenant with the Imam, our allegiance with the Imam on a daily basis, of course, if we recite this dua every day. And there are some narrations encouraging the Shias, the Muslims, to recite this dua during the time of the major occultation. The reason that this dua is called Dua al-Ahd is a phrase mentioned in this dua where we read, Allahumma inni ujaddidu lahu fi sabihati yawmi hadha wa ma ishtu min ayami ahdan wa aqdan وَعَقْدًا وَبَيْعَةً لَهُ فِي عُنُقِي O Allah, I update to him in the beginning of this day and throughout the days of lifetime عَهْدًا وَأَقْدًا وَبَيْعَةً A pledge, a covenant, an allegiance to which I commit myself and from which I neither convert nor change. So we have the three concepts of عَهْد, عَقْد and بَيْعَة allegiance, covenant and pledge. And the term Ahd has been mentioned in this part of the dua, and that is the reason the dua is called Dua al-Ahd.
That's right.
As for the importance of this dua, let me share a few points. It's been quoted that if a person recites this dua for 40 consecutive days in the morning, he or she would be among the supporters and soldiers and helpers of Imam Mahdi, even if he's not or she's not alive at that time. We know that we believe in the concept of raj'ah or return.
Yes.
Based on this concept, we know that after the reappearance of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam, according to the concept and the doctrine of raj'ah, which is rooted in the verses of the Noble Book of Quran, some people would be revived based on the permission of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Some among the most wicked people and some among the most righteous people.
So those who have the true love of Imam al-Asr in their heart can again pledge re-allegiance to Imam al-Asr, you mean?
They would be revived.
Okay.
I mean, some of the people who have passed away before the reappearance of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam, they will be revived. Okay. Some among the most wicked people, so that they taste the punishment of this world as well, some of the greatest enemies of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, and some among the most righteous human beings to see the world government based on justice of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam. The Imams of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam would be revived, especially the number of the narrations about Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam and after him about Imam Ali alayhi salam are mutawatir. So according to the narrations, if a believer recites this dua for 40 consecutive days, at least they may hope that they would be revived after the reappearance of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam, based on the concept of raj'a and to help the Imam in his great movement and revolution. This dua has been quoted by great Shia scholars like Sayyidina Tawus in Misbah al-Zair, Ibn al-Mashhadi in Al-Mazar al-Kabir, Kaf'ami in Al-Misbah, also in Al-Balad al-Amin. And this shows that they believed in the authenticity of this dua. Now,
that's right.
Going back to the main topic and the main subject of the question, as I mentioned, this dua is called Dua al-Ahd because in part of the dua, we are talking about updating a kind of covenant and pledge and allegiance with the Imam early in the morning. أُجَدِّدُ لَهُ فِي سَبِيحَةِ يَوْمِ هَذَا.
And it must be read out in the morning?
Exactly.
Only in the morning.
When it comes to recommended actions, this is the time that the Imams of the Ahlul Bayt have told us.
Uh-huh.
And in the phrases of dua, we also say that fi sabihati yawmi hadha. Of course, it doesn't mean that you are not allowed to recite this dua.
But the best timing is...
The best time and the time that is, decided by the Imams of the Ahlul Bayt, alayhi wa
salam. After Salat al-Subh or...
It doesn't make any difference.
It doesn't make any difference. No. Okay, that's right.
Because we have Allahumma inni ujadid lahu fi sabihati yawmi hadha. Of course, if you want to be acting based upon the precautions in jurisprudence, usually they say that subh or morning begins from the time after the adhan, the call to prayer of morning prayer. So the point about this dua and the importance of this dua is that on a daily basis, if we recite this dua, we are remembering the fact that we have a living Imam and we are updating our covenant and pledges to the Imam of our time.
Yes.
And this is the great importance and significance of this dua.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs on IRIB English Radio. You can send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
And what does it mean exactly, Sheikh, when we say ahd and allegiance or updating our allegiance with the Imam? What does it mean exactly? Is it only in words saying that or no, we have to do, for example, some special deeds and practices?
Of course not. It's not only the matter of words and speech. So we may refer to the narration which reads that مَن مَاتَ وَلَمْ يَعْرِفْ إِمَامَ زَمَانِهِ مَاتَ مِيتَةً جَاهِلِيَّةً. In each and every time we have Imam al-Zaman, Imam al-Asr, the Imam of the time. And in our time, the Imam of the time is no one but Imam Mahdi, may Allah hasten his reappearance. So according to that famous narration quoted by both Shia and Sunni scholars, if you die without knowing the Imam of your time, it is as if you have died the death of ignorance, meaning the people who lived before the time of the Prophet. So what does the knowledge and ma'rifah of the Imam mean? It's not only about knowing the name and the name of his father and mother and the date of his birth and so on and so forth. No, it's about the status and position of the Imam. And more important than that, our duties toward the Imam. So we may say that the first step should be this ma'rifah, this knowledge that we need to have regarding the Imam. And of course, there are many levels in this regard.
Yes.
And the deeper we study and we go to the scholars, then we may have a deeper knowledge and ma'rifah regarding the Imam of the Ahlul Bayt, alayhi salam. So this is the first step, to know the Imam, to know, how great is the Imam, to know how knowledgeable is the Imam, how virtuous is the Imam. Because unfortunately, in our time, we see among even some Shias who are not that familiar with the status and greatness of the Imam. And sometimes this is, encouraged by some of the false claimants.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, some of the false claimants, because of the fact that they themselves do not have enough knowledge, even religious knowledge, they claim that the knowledge of the Imam is also limited.
Yes.
And unfortunately, they may deviate some of the Shia, who of course are few in number, but yes. This is very unfortunate to see that such people are deviated by these false claimants.
That's right.
So this is that the ma'rifa that I'm talking about. We need to refer to the Quran, to the narrations of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, to know about the great and the vast knowledge of the Imam. So no one can claim that I am an Imam or a representative of the Imam. And the Imam doesn't need to have, this vast knowledge. No, if you have a true ma'rifa, true knowledge of the narrations, then you will see all those narrations talking about the vast knowledge of the
That's
Imam,
right.
The fact that the Imam knows whatever is hidden in the earth and the heaven, ilmu ma kan wa ma yakun, he knows everything about the past, about the present time and future, and so on and so forth.
And is the number of reciting this dua important? Because it is narrated that, for example, for 40 successive days or mornings, if somebody read out, it has a kind of significance, without a stop. Morning after morning for 40 days.
The number 40 is important, especially when it comes to Islamic spirituality and mysticism. And it's not only about this dua. We have many narrations in Shia and Sunni sources about the significance of repeating something for 40 times or for 40 days, and so on and so forth.
Yes.
In the Quran, we have the notion of 40 days when it comes to Moses alayhi salam going to Mount Sinai and talking to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for 30 days, and then it was extended for another 10 days, and altogether it was 40 days, the time of the supplication between Musa alayhi salam and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And we have some narrations that, for example, if you purify your actions, you make your actions sincere for Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for 40 days, then the fountains of wisdom would flow from your mouth, and so on and so forth. There are many narrations in this regard, to the extent that, special books are written under the title of Al-Arba'in or Arba'iniyat, meaning that the narrations referring to the number of 40, and some books of hadith which contain only 40 narrations. In our time, we have the famous book Al-Arba'in, written by Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayhi. But in the history of Islam, many great Shia and Sunni scholars, they have written books which contain only 40 narrations.
Yes.
So
the number 40
is important. And of course, it doesn't mean that we shouldn't follow this dua. But if we want to gain that reward which is mentioned in this narration, we need to recite this dua at least for 40 consecutive days.
That's right.
And some of the scholars believe that, especially the mystics, that if you do one action for 40 consecutive days, it may at least
have an effect.
Become a kind of what they called it, a malaka, a habit for you.
Yes.
So that you are not ready to leave that action anymore. So if you do that for 40 days, it doesn't mean that you will leave it after that. If you, for example, try to refrain from, let's say, backbiting for 40 days, then you are not going to start it, all over again after the 40 days. So this is the importance of this number as mentioned in this narration.
That's all right. Thank you very much.
So to just complete what I mentioned about different levels, the first level was ma'rifa, the knowledge of the Imam, and of course the next level, which is also important, is the actions. And to begin with, we need to pay attention to the obligations that we have and to abandon the forbidden actions, and of course to lead a life based on ethics and moral issues. We need to do it on a daily basis to remember that we have a living Imam, and we are updating a pledge, a covenant with the Imam, and during the day we remember that covenant. I think if we really do that, if we pay attention to the meaning of the words in Dua al-Ahd, at least in the long term, it would leave a great effect in our life. That doesn't make any difference, culturally speaking, socially speaking, when it comes to our behavior with our parents, children, neighbors, colleagues, and so on and so forth.
That's all right.
What matters is that we update our pledges with the Imam on a daily basis, and pay attention to the meaning of the words of this ziyara or dua.
That's all right. In one important extract of this dua, we read, "So, O Allah, please show us your vicegerent, the son of your prophet, and the namesake of your messenger, peace be upon him and his household, so that he shall tear up any wrong item that he will face and shall confirm and approve of the truth. So Allah, make him the shelter to whom your wronged servants shall resort, the supporter of those who cannot find any supporter save you, the reviver of the laws of your book that have been suspended, and the constructor of all signs of your religion and instructions of your messenger." Inshallah. Thank you very much, Sheikh. It was very kind of you. And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs on IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. For more information, visit our website, parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. See another episode. God bless you all. Fi amanullah.
إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Puraza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Family members of the victims of the Itaewon tragedy and thousands of their supporters remembered those 158 mostly young people whose lives were taken in a crowd crush October 29th. Some read letters to their lost loved ones.
Last year, we made a whole bunch of snow ducks all around outside our apartment. Please come and see me in my dreams sometimes. Please come see me someday. Maybe even as my future child. I love you forever, Seon.
Although tens of thousands were gathered, police did not manage the crowds and ignored emergency calls hours before the deadly crush. Among those who perished in the tragedy, 26 of them were foreigners. 5 of those were Iranian. And like many of the young people who died that evening, they were students who visited South Korea to get more experience in the world and primarily more education to better themselves. Victims' families want the truth and those responsible brought to justice. A class action lawsuit is suing the government, which has often deflected responsibility and blamed the victims. It reminds some of the ferry sinking in 2014, in which more than 300 people died.
The law should be a law to punish wrong people, but the government is humiliating, insulting, and degrading the victims and the families of the deceased. In the end, I think this happened because the Sewol ferry accident was not properly resolved.
Tonight marked the 49th day since the tragedy, signifying the end of the mourning period, when the spirit of those dead to be reborn reaches Buddha and bliss. Frank Smith, Seoul.
It's a daybreak. Raju Yadav is piling up his stock for the delivery in the retail market. He's delighted, saying markets are picking good pace and prices in the whole markets are not fluctuating since last quarter. Earlier, I would buy limited stock, he says. But since the prices are consistent and demand is satisfactory, I have bought more stock than usual. I'm testing my luck, he says. Many Indians like Raju are optimistic as the country is picking up pace as the fast-growing major economy.
We are not strictly a very heavily exporting nation. Most of our producers actually rely on our domestic market. But exports are important for us because we do import some very critical commodities.
Experts say with COVID outbreak shaking major economies, India maintained its consistency in almost all sectors except the manufacturing and employment, which they say is like a diesel engine and needs a major boost. Many economic experts say investments are flowing smoothly in the world's second most populous nation, adding the country needs to revitalize its manufacturing sector, job creation, and address bottlenecks in power, mining, and infrastructure.
More than the economy, I would say our problem, what the manufacturing sector can boost is good jobs, you know, which all Indians will agree are lacking in India. I mean, that's why so many of us go abroad, right? Because these good jobs are lacking, we are wasting our talent. And the reason is that we have never seriously thought about how to make manufacturing grow.
India growth forecast is projected at 7% despite turbulent markets and war in Ukraine that shook markets. Based on Morgan Stanley and S&P Global, the country is projected to overtake Japan and Germany to become the third largest economy by 2030. Economic experts say trade tensions between the United States and China will also open up new opportunities for India as the companies are considering India for production capacity as a second option. Many, however, argue India needs double-digit growth, which would be vital for the second most populous nation, where a huge workforce and young professionals join the market every year, besides lifting millions out of poverty. While the coronavirus pandemic ravaged the world's economy, India managed to mitigate the impact of the outbreak, mainly by relying on its domestic market. But experts say the economic growth is expected to fall in the coming months as the country grapples with high inflation, rising unemployment, and a spike in oil prices, and also a threat of global economic recession. Munawar Zaman, New Delhi.
Protests through Brussels on Friday was organised by Belgium's three largest unions. They claim the country's federal government and EU authorities are failing to adequately help citizens during the current escalating cost of living crisis. Many also question how the EU is able to set aside at least 20 billion euro for Ukraine in 2023.
We are all against this war because it's about imperialism, it's about money. There's more behind. It's not only about Ukraine and about Russia.
Ukraine is a key point, but our people here as well. And the money is there. People have to be taxed properly, especially the 1%.
It's important to help the Ukrainians, but what about the people here in Europe and in Belgium?
The EU's energy sanctions against Russia over the war in Ukraine have backfired. Oil, gas, diesel, petrol, and electricity prices are through the roof. Inflation across the Eurozone is running at 10%. However, wages are not going up.
Many people can't buy the good food. Many people can't pay for our apartment.
Landlords are taking advantage from the inflation to raise the rents.
Landlords will now have another excuse. The European Central Bank increased interest rates by a half of 1% on Thursday.
And based on the substantial upward revision to the inflation outlook, we expect to raise them further.
The national strike on Friday resulted in flight cancellations, according to Brussels Airport. There were also major disruptions to tram, bus and metro services. Union members, not just here in Belgium, but across the EU, are warning of protests throughout 2023, which will impact public services, unless their cost of living concerns are addressed. Jerome Hughes,
Brussels.
The people providing the nation with care, asking to be looked after by the authorities. Some of the tens of thousands of UK nurses who have walked off their jobs demanding better pay and conditions. Lakshmi has worked for the NHS for 22 years.
Shortages of nurses have led to less staff, and you can't care for people if you don't have a staff to care for. So it's person safety mainly, and if here comes, obviously people are leaving profession due to unfair pays, overworked, stressed, and shortage of staff.
Hailed as heroes during the pandemic, nurses up and down the country, Save Scotland, are staging two 12-hour strikes this week and next. Their representative body, the Royal College of Nursing, says they had no choice when the government rejected calls for talks on NHS pay. The RCN says nurses are 20% worse off in real terms today than they were in 2010 due to successive below-inflation pay rewards.
Things have gotten so bad that hospitals, one in four hospitals, are having to set up food banks for nurses and for other staff. This is unprecedented. But we're not just fighting for pay, we're fighting for the survival of the NHS.
One reason for that concern is the number of staff leaving the profession. 25,000 nursing staff have quit the NHS in the past year. The government says the demand for a 19% pay rise is not affordable. The unions argue the money is there. The nurses' strike is part of a wave of industrial action sweeping the UK this year, with the strikers demanding better pay and conditions as a worsening cost of living crisis pushes more and more people into dire straits.
The unions are warning that the strikes this month could be the beginning of a longer period of action if governments refuse formal pay negotiations or if future talks do not result in satisfactory outcomes. Saeed Purizap, London.
The Saudi-led coalition has once again detained two fuel ships, preventing them from reaching the crucial western port of Hodeidah. The Yemeni Petroleum Company says the two fuel vessels were detained despite obtaining the necessary permits and being cleared from inspection in the port of Djibouti.
Preventing fuel ships from entering Yemen continues to take its toll on the country's battered economy. It has led to an increase in food prices and basic supplies and has made life harder for the Yemeni people as Saudi Arabia continues its blockade.
Rashid Al-Haddad, an economic expert, says the seizure of the fuel ships is just one of many war tactics employed by the Saudi-led coalition to put pressure on the Yemeni people.
The Saudi aggression is always exerting effort to make life difficult for all Yemenis by depriving them of fuel resources. 70% of fuel enters the country through the port of Hodeidah, which affects 22 million people. The Saudi-led coalition is using this as a war tactic, not against Ansarullah, but against the Yemeni people as a collective punishment.
Considering the expected rise in shipping prices, Dalal, a local fruit merchant, says he will be forced to raise his prices if no fuel enters the country.
This watermelon is normally sold for 1,500 Yemeni riyals when fuel is available. However, whenever they prevent fuel from entering Yemen, the price of this watermelon increases from 1,500 to 3,000 Yemeni riyals.
This blockade has caused an economic crisis. The price of wheat and fuel have increased. We don't have anything and we're not even being paid salaries. We're besieged from all aspects of life.
The Yemeni government says the illegal seizure of Yemeni oil is an act of war and a violation of Yemen's sovereignty, which will be met with force if continued. Yusuf Mawri, Sana'a.
As they came together for a summit in Brussels, EU leaders were acutely aware that energy storage tanks will run dry in the coming months. There are still major divisions in the EU over a gas price cap and a proposal to buy energy from international suppliers as one single customer.
It is important that we do not outbid each other as member states, but that we use the market power to purchase gas.
It's thought a deal might be finalised on Monday. There are plenty of other divisions within the 27-nation EU. Austria is blocking Romania and Bulgaria from the border-free Schengen area. Meanwhile, funding for Hungary is being withheld over rule of law issues.
Russia is blackmailing us every day. But if we start to blackmail each other, this is not good. And this is absolutely not good for European Union.
A dark shadow of corruption is hanging over the EU. It emerged last Friday that Qatar has been bribing politicians and officials.
This scandal is a very serious matter indeed, which can shake trust in democracy and the parliamentary system. Thus, it is good that the Belgian authorities are thoroughly investigating.
At their summit, EU leaders refused to be drawn on the question of possible sanctions against Qatar. However, they signed off on more sanctions against Russia and also Iran. The leaders agreed to provide at least 20 billion euro to Ukraine in 2023. Campaigners say they should be doing more for their own citizens.
So many people in poverty, like everything what's going on from the crisis from 2008 until now, nothing changed.
It's clear that things could soon get a lot worse if the EU fails to secure a reliable long-term energy source at the right price. The costly Ukrainian refugee crisis is also growing by the day. So the final EU leaders summit of 2022 has now concluded. Analysts say the unprecedented challenges they will face in 2023 could stretch the EU project beyond breaking point. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
While the West is expanding sanctions against Moscow and Iran over their military cooperation, the potential for developing relations between the two countries is huge, since Russia and Iran are under tough Western sanctions and therefore have little to fear.
The will of our governments is interconnected. Our high-ranking officials and our peoples do not pay attention to the shouts of the entire West and continue to strengthen their ties and interaction.
At the press conference held in Moscow, Iran's ambassador to Russia summed up the outcome of relations between Moscow and Iran in 2022. He noted that Russia's ruble is used in more than 40% of trade between the two countries and that the Russian currency may become the main one in bilateral trade. According to his remarks, Tehran supported the idea of using the ruble as the main currency in regional unions such as the EAEU. He also referred to efforts to integrate the national payment systems MIR and SHETAP as part of financial and economic cooperation between Russia and Iran. According to the Iranian envoy, Russia and Iran are seeking to reduce the dominance of certain currencies, including the dollar, in bilateral trade and economic relations. Jalali further said the automotive industry and space sector have become another field of cooperation between the two countries. In August, Russia launched remote sensing satellite Hayam into orbit on behalf of Iran.
As for our negotiations, I want to say that negotiations between our respective organizations in the field of outer space are ongoing on a regular basis.
Iran is investigating the possibility of producing cars jointly with Russia. Two leading automakers of the Islamic Republic, Saipan and Iran Hadro, took part in last summer's exhibition in Moscow and held negotiations with the Russian side. In addition to the joint production, the two countries are also discussing the possibility of sending Iranian cars to Russia. Russian and Iranian officials have time and again said that the two countries are determined to further expand bilateral cooperation. They have expressed confidence that the aim will materialize despite all the challenges the two nations might face, given the numerous capacities the two sides have. Marina Kartunova, Moscow.
In a mass rally and under a sea of green flags, men and women from all walks of life came out to take part in Hamas's 35th anniversary celebration. Hamas, who was founded in 1987, won the Palestinian parliamentary elections in January 2006, but remains blacklisted by the European Union and the United States for refusing to recognize the Israeli regime. The movement has fought several wars against the Israeli regime since 2007. The resistance movement said that Al-Quds, is at the center of the Palestinian struggle for freedom.
Hamas asserts today that Al-Quds is at the core of our struggle against the Israeli occupation. We're also sending a message of Palestinian unity. As we mark this day, we want to thank all Muslims and Arabs who support the Palestinian people, especially the Axis of Resistance.
People from all walks of life attending the rally called on all Palestinian factions to increase the resistance against the Israeli occupation to bring about the liberation of Al-Quds.
We will continue to support Hamas and the resistance until we liberate every inch of our land. We call on the Muslim nation to support Palestine and to support Al-Quds. People came out today to send a strong message of support to the resistance against the Israeli occupation.
Hamas supporters said they want the Israelis to know that the Islamic resistance movement is a force to be reckoned with.
We are here today to express our support to Hamas on its anniversary and to tell the whole world that Palestinians are supporting the resistance. Hamas has a very strong military wing that continues to grow. Hamas, along with all the resistance factions, will continue to fight for the sake of Al-Quds and the Al-Aqsa Mosque.
35 years on, Hamas continues to garner support due to its adherence to armed resistance against the Israeli regime. People here say that despite years of siege and multiple wars, Hamas movement has managed to defy all odds and survive all attempts to weaken it. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
The implementation of a comprehensive strategic partnership between China and Iran is getting a kickstart as a high-ranking delegation headed by the Chinese Vice Premier Hu Chunhua meets with Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi in Tehran. After his meeting with the Iranian president, the Chinese top official met with Iran's finance minister, where the two sides signed 16 MOUs to boost cooperation in different fields. Oil and gas, banking, investment, and strategic projects are the four fields of economic cooperation that are now on top of the agenda. There has already been a roughly 20% increase in trade, and the outlook for 2023 is even higher, according to Iran's finance minister. China is still Iran's biggest oil client, despite Washington's bid to bring Tehran's exports down to zero. And its close involvement in the built-out of Iran's manufacturing infrastructure is seen entirely in line with its Belt and Road Initiative. Analysts say this could represent a shift in the global balance of the oil and gas sector and create new markets where no U.S. dollars are involved.
Iran-China relations date back to the ancient Silk Road. Both countries have always had close ties, but over the past couple of years, their relations have become even more significant, with the U.S. putting pressure on China on the one hand and placing sanctions on Iran on the other. Gisum Shahmadi, Tehran.
This is IRIB English Radio. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
In the U.S., the Transportation Security Administration, TSA, has said it has recovered 6,301 firearms from airport security checkpoints so far this year, as of Friday, 16th of December, more than 88% of which were loaded. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. CBS News has covered this story. Transportation Security Administration officers have confiscated 6,301 firearms from airport passengers so far in 2022, the highest number recorded since the agency's inception. Of those guns taken at airport security checkpoints, 88% were loaded, the agency announced on Friday, 16th of December. The Transportation Security Administration, TSA, said it expects to have confiscated about 6,600 firearms by the end of this year, which would mark a 10.5% increase from the 5,972 firearms seized in 2021, which was also a record. The agency also reported on Friday that it was raising the maximum civil penalty for a firearms violation from $13,910 to $14,950. The top five airports for firearms stops so far this year, according to the Transportation Security Administration, TSA, were the Hartsfield-Jackson Atlanta International Airport, the Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport, Houston's George Bush Intercontinental Airport, Nashville International Airport, and the Phoenix Sky Harbor International Airport. Nashville had the highest rate of firearm confiscation per capita, according to a TSA spokesperson. In April, Representative Madison Cawthorn was cited for attempting to bring a gun through security at the Charlotte Douglas International Airport in North Carolina, according to local police. Madison Cawthorn admitted the firearm was his and cooperated with officers, according to police. He was issued a citation for possession of a dangerous weapon on city property. According to the Transportation Security Administration policy, individuals toting either loaded firearms or unloaded firearms with accessible ammunition can face fines starting at $3,000, plus a criminal referral to law enforcement. Those with aggravating circumstances, including a history of carrying loaded weapons into security checkpoints, could be forced to shell out the maximum fine. The Transportation Security Administration will grant civil penalty action only after completing an investigation. If passengers violate state laws, TSA refers cases to local authorities. The Transportation Security Administration also revokes its pre-check eligibility for at least 5 years for passengers caught with a firearm and routinely conducts enhanced screening for those passengers to ensure no other threats are present. ABC News has also covered the same story, giving us more details. The Transportation Security Administration, TSA, confiscated a record number of guns at checkpoints in 2022, most of which were loaded, as the agency has increased the maximum fine for firearm violations. The Transportation Security Administration, TSA, said it has recovered 6,301 firearms from airport security checkpoints so far this year, as of Friday, 16th of December, more than 88% of which were loaded. That surpasses the previous record of 5,972 firearms detected in 2021. TSA said it anticipates it will have intercepted some 6,600 firearms in carry-on bags by the end of 2022, which would be a nearly 10% increase over 2021's record level. The agency also announced on Friday, 16th of December, that it has increased the maximum fine for firearm violations to $14,950 to reduce the threat of firearms at checkpoints. Previously, the maximum fine was $13,910. I applaud the work of our transportation security officers who do an excellent job of preventing firearms from getting into the security area of airports and onboard aircraft, TSA Administrator David Pekoske said in a statement. Pekoske added, when a passenger brings a firearm to the checkpoint, this can consume significant security resources and poses a potential threat to transportation security, in addition to being very costly for the passenger. Firearms or ammunition are not allowed in carry-on bags at any TSA security checkpoint, even if a passenger has a concealed weapon permit. Transportation Security Administration regulations do allow passengers to transport unloaded firearms in checked baggage. Travelers must comply with state possession laws and are required to declare their firearms to airline personnel when checking in, among other requirements. Firearms detected in carry-on bags are turned over to local law enforcement authorities. Passengers who bring firearms to a checkpoint could face a fine, with repeat violations resulting in higher penalties. Offending travelers may also potentially face arrest by law enforcement officers depending on state or local laws. The firearms record comes as the Transportation Security Administration is seeing the volume of travelers rebounding to, if not surpassing, pre-COVID-19 pandemic levels. The website of Forbes magazine, Forbes.com, also has covered the same story. As of Friday, 16th of December, Transportation Security Administration officers across the country have intercepted a record 6,301 firearms at airport security checkpoints in 2022, according to the TSA. With just weeks left in December, the TSA expects a total tally of 6,600 firearms in carry-on bags by the end of the year. That will be about a 10% increase over 2021's previous record of 5,972 firearms and more than a 400% jump compared to a decade ago. Last year, a senior TSA official called out an epidemic of guns at our airports. But what is driving this epidemic? In 2021 and 2022, a wave of states including Alabama, Arkansas, Georgia, Indiana, Iowa, Montana, Ohio, Tennessee, Texas, and Utah passed laws no longer requiring residents to hold a permit to carry a concealed firearm. A legislative priority for the National Rifle Association, NRA, and other groups, permitless carry measures are now in place in half of all states. These new laws, combined with soaring travel demand in the third year of the COVID-19 pandemic, are contributing to an increase in guns at airports across the country, according to experts. We've got a significant rise in the population of new, never-before gun owners, and then we have a significant rise in new air travelers, a TSA official told Forbes magazine. Getting caught with a firearm at an airport checkpoint carries a civil fine of $1,500, according to TSA guidance, if the gun is loaded, as 88% of them are, according to the agency, then the fine jumps to $3,000. For repeat offenders, The TSA is bumping up the maximum potential penalty from $14,000 to $14,950. And that's not including lawyers' fees. Over the past 3 years, the Transportation Security Administration, TSA, has levied more than $52 million in civil penalties against travelers caught with guns at airports. As of October of this year, penalties had already topped $20 million for 2022. Firearm possession laws vary by state and local government, but firearms are never allowed in carry-on bags at any TSA security checkpoint, even if a passenger has a concealed weapon permit.
این چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
الله يا الله سبحان الله الله يا الله والحمد لله الله ولا إله إلا الله الله يا الله والله أكبر.
This is a part of political divine will of the founder of Islamic Republic of Iran, Imam Khomeini. Now that with the blessed support of Allah and with the endeavor of the committed nation, the foundation of the Islamic Republic has been laid, we should bear in mind that what is important in establishing the Islamic government is Islam itself and its progressive rules. It is formidable for the great nation of Iran to ensure the implementation and protection of Islamic values in all aspects of life.
In the name of God, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, dear audience. Welcome to a new episode of Spring of the Truth from IRIB English Radio. This is Zainab Musavi, and in this program, we try to have a profound reading of Imam Khomeini's precious words and speeches. Now, in this episode, what we're going to talk about is Imam Khomeini's views on ethics and spirituals. In that regard, he says Islam only values virtue and piety. Whoever is more pious and virtuous has more value before God. Well, this sentence revolves around the value of human beings. There are several definitions and requirements for value in either Islamic or general religious contexts. While some religious texts emphasize on honesty, integrity, love, and happiness as criteria for values of human beings, Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh is viewing value from a different aspect. The first point about this sentence is that human's value is defined in his or her relation to God. In fact, such type of spiritual value is of utmost importance in human's life, and it is the most comprehensive aspect of viewing value. Another lesson one could take from this sentence is that if somebody wants to build his or her soul, two of the best accommodations for that purpose are virtue, or what we call in Arabic birr, and piety or taqwa. When we look at the teachings of Islam and the acts of worship, we understand that in most cases, Islam guides people towards the state of taqwa. Taqwa incorporates consciousness and fear of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala as well as piety. Okay, let's have a short break and we'll be back in no time.
Ya Rabbana salli ala Taha al-Nabi wa alihi
sallallahu alayhi
Welcome back, dear audience. You are listening to Spring of the Truth. We were talking about the concepts of value in human beings, and we said that piety and virtue are important factors in that regard. Virtue in Islam refers to doing good deeds which might be in favor of others. The Islamic moral virtues are wisdom, courage, charity, and justice. A person who has developed the four faculties within himself or herself isn't praiseworthy unless the possession of these virtues benefit other people as well. In other words, purely internal and private virtues do not have much value, and their possessors do not deserve praise. We can see that Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh sees human value in both internal and outside aspects of it.
Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.